In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, February 22nd, 2013, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour, it's the Federal News Countdown, and this week is no exception. But we have a little bit of a twist for you on the program today. My guest, just one guest on the program this week, it's Jeff Neal of ICF International, former Chief Human Capital Officer at DHS, among other posts in government. It's great to see you again, my friend. Thanks for coming in.
Good to see you again, Francis. Thanks for having me.
I'm happy to do it. We're going to do it a little bit differently this week, as I said. There's no other story to talk about, really, besides sequestration. The only thing, as I looked over what happened this week that looked like it might be of potential interest to folks is the cybersecurity report from Mandiant about what's going on in China, and we've talked about that on a number of occasions on the program this week. So what I'd like to do, when someone's on the countdown, we speak midweek about the reminder to choose the stories that you would like. And in addition to stories, you wrote, I think, three very compelling pieces, just paragraphs, about how sequester will impact federal agencies. So what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about those three pieces, and we're also going to talk about my colleague Jack Moore has pulled the five highest traffic stories from federalnewsradio.com about sequestration. And what is remarkable to me, you didn't know this because I didn't ask Jack to pull the stories until this afternoon, but the three things that you're writing about are the same three things that our readers and listeners apparently care about the most, because they're the things that they're going to federalnewsradio.com to learn more about. And it's remarkable how they track together. And so I'm really happy to have a chance to sit down with you and go through this stuff and really kind of tear it apart and put it back together, Jeff. The first thing that you're writing about is, and we're going to post what you're writing on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later so folks can refer back to it. But you're talking about the efficiency of government programs. And this is something that has been, we're hearing all kinds of thoughts about how this might work and how this will how programs will be affected. And the consensus seems to be, if you cut something 10%, or you cut everything X percent, whatever it is, the good programs and the bad programs will be impacted the same. Is that your takeaway on how this all will look, do you think?
It does affect the good programs, the bad programs, the middle-of-the-road programs. What it does, though, is you know, first of all, across the board isn't necessarily across the board. If you have a lease, for example, for your building, that's a fixed cost. You're not going to be able to say to your landlord, well, we're going to cut the lease payment 10%, or you might find your agency out on the street. So you're going to have to take that 10% from something else. And agencies have a lot of costs like that they can't change right away. So that means the impact on a lot of things is going to be greater. So then they're going to start going into programs and saying, okay, how can we cut something back without necessarily killing it? And when they do that, then they start to increase cost. A simple example people see is cost of weapon systems. You know, when you drag them out over more and more years, the cost gets higher and higher. And so when you cut 10%, you don't save 10% in the long run. You might pay 20 or 30% more. So we take programs that are already struggling in some cases already, weaken them dramatically by taking money out of them and taking it out pretty indiscriminately, and then expecting them to perform. And I think that the long-term impact on the government's costs is going to be pretty amazing. You know, a few years ago, I used to run the headquarters building for the Defense Logistics Agency. I took a detour into doing that for a year about 15 years ago. And the cost of maintenance on a building is a great example where you can maintain a building, you can spend the dollars to do that, or you can not spend that money. When you choose not to spend that money, your cost farther down the road is many times more, because things that would have been kept up break. And then instead of just doing maintenance, you're replacing or repairing. And in a lot of respects, other types of government programs are the same way. If you don't invest in them properly up front, you really hurt yourself in the long run. So this is one of those effects that in some cases may not show up for several years. People will say, oh, you cut 10% out of that program, no big deal. And then 2 or 3 years from now, you find out that the cost to the taxpayers is enormous.
Well, one of the stories that is in our top five list, it's at number four. It's Jack's story headlined, OMB to Congress, sequestration impact real, but furloughs not immediate. And it's coverage of the Senate Appropriations Committee hearing last week. Danny Werfel was there. My colleague Jason Miller actually talked to Danny this week, and you heard part one of that yesterday. You'll hear part two of it this afternoon in the 5 o'clock hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. But this is the words that Mr. Werfel had to say to the Appropriations Committee and some of his colleagues. Ash Carter was at this hearing and others. The numbers sound striking about the number of people that won't be there and so on. And the people impact is really easy for people like me to cover and say this many people will be furloughed for this many days. And we'll talk about some of those later on in the hour. The kinds of costs that you're talking about are not nearly as sexy,
right,
but they're just as important, it strikes me, as to the operations of the agency as the people costs are.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of money in agencies and programs like that. And so they're not sexy. They're not things that people are going to get excited about immediately because the impact isn't necessarily immediate. But, you know, people will talk a lot about efficiency and effectiveness in government. And this is one of those examples where we're going to basically take a sledgehammer to government efficiency and effectiveness, and then probably in a few years start complaining that agencies aren't doing things that we really thought they should do. And these types of cuts are going to cause those problems.
When I read this, when you're writing on this, when you first sent it over, I thought, now, we're getting, not just me and not just the station, but everybody that covers this stuff in the media is getting all kinds of outreach from all over the administration saying we'd like to talk to – this person would like to talk to you, mm-hmm. comment about sequestration and so on. And it strikes me that they're telling the people story, and I think they're being very careful to detail as much as they can about the people story. This part of the story is not a story that we're hearing a lot about, mm-hmm. and I wonder why that is, because that seems to me to be as compelling. I mean, I'm a homeowner, so I know that if I don't maintain the pipes in the house, the pipes burst when it gets cold outside, right, and that's a bigger mess and a lot more expensive mess to clean up than if I do the maintenance that I need to do. So it seems that would resonate mm-hmm. with people equally to this many people will be laid off for this period of time.
Well, I think the problem is that if you look at available airtime and you look at available column inches in a newspaper or magazine, there's only so much you can talk about. And so if you've got a limited amount to talk about, you find the things that are going to be most dramatic and are a little sexier, and you say, okay, that's what we're going to talk about. So that's why the people side of it is getting such an enormous amount of press. It's just it's so obvious how it's going to affect people. The other things aren't quite as interesting to some folks, but the long-term implications are actually, in some cases, as severe or more severe.
The long-term impacts, too, are the impacts that I don't think we hear much about. We didn't hear a lot about it during the shutdown when that was a possibility. We didn't hear a lot about that during the debt limit discussion. So, and again, maybe that's because that's just a harder story to tell and not as impactful immediately as some of the other things that we hear about.
Yeah, I think it is just a harder story to tell. And if you haven't been involved in running programs and trying to budget for them and looking at what it costs you if you spread a program out over multiple years, if you haven't gotten directly involved in that, then it probably doesn't immediately leap to the front of your list of things that are going to be a problem. But in the 33 years I spent in government, I spent a lot of time managing programs and looking at how to get them done most efficiently. And every time someone wants to cut your budget, they say, oh, we'll just spread it out. And what we were able to show time and time again is that you can do that to a degree, but then you get to the point where it's just adding costs.
Mm-hmm. What it sounds like you're telling me is that this comes back to something that you and I have talked about in this program before, and that I've talked about with a number of other people both in and out of government, and that is to do this the right way. If we wanted to do this effectively, if we agree as a country or if Congress agrees as an entity that we have to spend less as a government, then we need to look carefully at what each agency does, decide what they don't need to do anymore,
right,
and then make those things go away and decide what's adequate to continue to do the things that we decide stay on the list. Am I hearing you correctly?
Yeah. What happens, though, is when you start doing that, it's hard to find things that people will agree to. There was a poll about a year ago that asked people about cutting government spending. And the vast majority of Americans believe you should cut government spending. So then they gave them a list of like 20 different things. Should you cut defense? No. Should you cut school lunch programs? No. Should you cut education programs? No. Student loans? No. And everything on the list, with I think the exception of foreign aid, the majority of people did not want it cut.
And people probably thought foreign aid was like 10% of the budget, and
yes,
it's a fraction of a percent.
Right, it's a minuscule amount of money, and they think it's just hundreds of billions of dollars. And so the concept of cutting government spending is very popular. The reality of cutting government programs, particular programs, is a very, very different matter, and people generally don't want to see the programs cut that they think are good programs or programs that benefit them or people important to them. So it's what makes it so hard to cut government spending.
Federal News Radio's number 4 sequestration story of the week from Jack Moore mentions, I said Ash Carter was at this Senate Appropriations Committee hearing, and he talked about a point that you raised just a few minutes ago, and he said, at the very time we're trying to be parsimonious with the taxpayers' dollar, we're wasting it by forcing our industry to behave in an economically inefficient way. And I thought that was a very eloquent way of telling Congress, you're forcing us to not really save the money that you want us to save,
right,
by the way that you're presenting this to us to execute.
Right. And Deputy Secretary Carter, if you recall, used to be the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology and Logistics. So he knows what he's talking about with respect to buying things and buying services. So what he said is spot on.
Jeff Neal is with ICF International and my guest for the hour today on the Federal News Countdown. A little bit of a different twist. We're looking at the week's most popular sequestration stories and talking about some of the writing that Jeff Neal is doing about sequestration. You can find that later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And we will continue on the Federal News Countdown in just a moment.
Morning to you, too.
Okay, so I was a knight. I had a sword, and our house was a castle. There was this angry dragon. It was kind of scary.
Oh, yeah?
But I protected the castle.
Oh, that's my brave little man. I'm glad our castle is safe.
Your home is your castle, and sometimes you need help defending it. The National Association of Realtors supports maintaining homeowner tax incentives because they make home ownership more affordable for more families. Learn more at houselogic.com.
Paid for by the National Association of Realtors.
If you raise high the buff in blue, now's your chance to win prizes for showing your commitment to the Colonials. Visit RaiseHighRewards.com now and start earning points for your likes, retweets, shares, check-ins, and more with GW Athletics content from GWSports.com and social media properties. Registration is free, and you can win special fan experiences, ticket upgrades, and buff in blue gear. Visit RaiseHighRewards.com now.
Giving you the edge on healthy living. Here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. Living in 27 places over 52 years, it's been easy for Martha and Dick Olson to adapt to changes. At least until a few years ago, when Martha began to have a little trouble remembering new phone numbers, addresses.
And I will see somebody and I will think, now what was their name?
Martha was diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment, or MCI. That diagnosis prompted many questions. Questions that were answered at Mayo Clinic's Habit program.
Habit is a form of memory, but it's the kind of memory that's preserved preserved even as other aspects of your memory decline.
Dr. Glenn Smith says a key part of the program is learning to use a journal to keep track of things you want to remember. The program also focuses on staying active physically, mentally, and socially. And data shows it's working.
6 months out, people are still functioning as well as they did when they started.
For Medical Edge, I'm Tracy McCray.
Mythics Consulting is hiring. Mythics Consulting is an award-winning Oracle Platinum specialized consulting partner working to enable the Oracle-powered enterprise. And Mythics Consulting is looking for IT professionals that get the job done. Available positions include leading Oracle solution areas like applications, enterprise content management, and big data. Mythics Consulting is the go-to Oracle systems integrator with open positions and ready to hire high-skilled IT professionals. Check it out at mythics.com/careers. That's mythics.com/careers.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
I'm Emily Kopp. On Monday's Federal Drive, we begin the countdown to sequestration. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley tells us, get ready for those sweeping budget cuts March 1st. We'll also talk with him about the IRS whistleblower program, and we'll learn about the National Library of Medicine's plan to track your Twitter account. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Counting down the top five most viewed sequestration stories on federalnewsradio.com. A little twist on the Federal News Countdown this week, and my guest to talk about them and some of the things that he's writing about sequestration, Jeff Neal of ICF International. And the number three sequestration story on federalnewsradio.com this week, Jeff, fits with something that you and I talked about in the first segment. The headline is Sequestration No Longer Unthinkable, Former Pentagon Insider Says. And it's Jack Moore's story about my conversation with Bill Lynn of DRS Technologies, former Deputy Secretary of Defense. And the first thing that he said when he sat in the chair that you're in right now for Pentagon Solutions was, this was supposed to be so terrible that there was, of course, no way Congress would ever let it happen. And now it appears that this is going to happen. I mean, every Capitol insider that I talk to is indicating there's not going to be a deal. This is going to happen March 1st, and agencies are really going to have to pick up the pieces and figure out what happens next.
I think Bill Lynn is right. You would think, of course, to have a deal that would mean somebody would be working on a deal, and I'm assuming when the Congress gets back from their vacation, they will talk about a deal. But this needs to be done by the end of the month, and that's not likely to happen. You recall the Budget Control Act implemented sequestration as a kind of a fail-safe to make certain Congress could reach a deal. So you come up with something that is so draconian that doing it would be unthinkable, and that will force Congress to act. And I guess what we used to consider to be unthinkable is being thunk now, and it's kind of surprising. It's kind of disappointing too. I think all of us are probably hoping that our Congress will do something to make this not happen.
Mm-hmm.
But right now it looks like it's going to happen, and everybody is planning for it, and that planning is it's very limited planning. When you look at the amount of time that people are going to have. Number one, you're looking at kind of a meat cleaver approach to doing the cuts, and then they're going to be planned over a period of weeks. Wow. You're going to take massive amounts out of federal agencies and plan it in weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these things, in some agencies, you might be able to cut the percentages they're talking about. If someone said, okay, you have 2 years to implement them, you've got to plan them, you've got to look at the impact, you've got to make very careful decisions about priorities and what's really going to meet the needs of the American people, and then you implement. But to just push it off a cliff is not going to be a very effective thing to do, and it's going to get really ugly really fast.
Now, the word that I keep hearing when it comes to that idea of reprioritizing is reprogramming.
Right.
And I hear that word over and over again. And when this first started to look more and more likely, at least in the beginning of February, I started asking around, and that's a lot more complicated than it appears on the surface. And the main reason is because essentially Congress is giving up what it treasures the most, and that's the ability to tell the agencies how they can spend their money and how they can't.
Absolutely. To do reprogramming, I've done some reprogramming of money in my career, and you have to go to the appropriators in Congress and get their approval to do it. And it's something it's done, excuse me, but it's not done across the board on a daily basis. It takes time. And so getting reprogramming done isn't the solution to sequestration, because there's no time to do it. Reprogramming sometimes takes months. There aren't months to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So agencies aren't going to have a lot of choices. I'm sure in some cases they're going to go in for reprogramming because they see some sequestration impacts that are just so horrendous to them that they don't feel like they have an alternative. But it's not going to happen immediately, particularly if the appropriators start getting reprogramming requests from dozens and dozens of organizations at the same time.
The idea of the avalanche of all different kinds of requests and exemptions and on and on and on is something we'll talk about later on in the program, too, because there's another area in particular I want to ask you about when it comes to that. Jeff Neal is my guest from ICF International, former Chief Human Capital Officer at the Department of Homeland Security, among other positions in government. And we'll continue on a special edition of the Federal News Countdown in just a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
The military and the Coast Guard are extending certain benefits to same-sex partners of service members. Identification cards and access to commissaries are among the 22 different benefits that will now be offered. DOD did not, however, extend important housing and health care benefits to gay and lesbian couples due to current federal law. The military has until October 1st to put the new rules into effect.
The start of a new year is one of the best times to review the state of your financial affairs. Unfortunately, many individuals overlook one of the most important aspects of their financial plan, life insurance. WEPA, a nonprofit association, enables federal employees to purchase better life insurance at far better prices. As a superior alternative or supplement to FEGLI, WEPA provides more coverage, more benefits, and greater flexibility, yet costs much less. Visit WAEPA.org to learn more. Once again, that's WAEPA.org.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Brigadier General Jeffrey Sinclair, facing charges at Fort Bragg, wants to add civilian lawyers to his team after his military lawyers expressed concern that their careers could be harmed by defending him. Military Judge James Pohl asked Sinclair in court about an email the general sent to the head of the Army's legal branch suggesting the three lawyers assigned to defend him are concerned about retaliation. I'm J.J. Green.
Every day, EADS North America supports Homeland Security and defense missions here at home and around the globe. Over land and water, in our ports and at our points of entry, EADS North America provides critical solutions and systems that protect our borders and coastlines. Our vigilance is unwavering. Our commitment is steadfast. EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
For those of you who like to check your connection speed, you can go to broadbandreports.com. You can get their speed test. You can test your upload and download speed. I like to do that periodically. Sometimes my Fios download speed gets up to 16 megabits per second, but this morning I had 10 down and 3 up. And you've got 60 megabits per second. I'd love to have that kind of bandwidth, but 60 could be overkill. I'd say anything more than 30 is probably not worth the money.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Active families, active kids. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Kids have a lot of energy, but may not always be motivated to be active. However, when parents are active, kids are more likely to join in. Shelley Full is Executive Director of the President's Council on Fitness, Sports, and Nutrition.
Kids do what we do, not what we say.
Playing active video games is one way to burn calories.
Choosing games for your family where the entire family can be utilizing that gaming system, getting that quality family time, and being active together, what's better than that?
Parents and kids alike can start making activity a habit by earning their Presidential Active Lifestyle Award, also known as PALA Plus. The Plus incorporates good nutrition practices.
We encourage you to be active 30 minutes a day for adults, 60 minutes for kids, 5 days a week for 6 weeks.
Learn more at fitness.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
We are now more than 1 year into the Shared First strategy. Many first-year initiatives focused on simple feats like email, but virtually no area of IT is exempt, from data centers to mobile devices. With agencies due to deliver their enterprise roadmap for shared services to OMB, join AFSIA Bethesda on February 28th at the Bethesda North Marriott to hear top agency officials discuss the shift to more strategic sourcing and a greater focus on commodity IT. Register today at afsiabethesda.org/febbreakfast.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. A little different take on the Federal News Countdown this week. Just one guest. It's Jeff Neal from ICF International. And the reason we're doing it this way is Jeff sent me some thoughts on sequestration this week. You were scheduled to be on the program. And obviously, there's nothing else going on really that's commanding the people's attention the way sequestration is. So, in addition to sending me some story ideas, you sent me some thoughts that you wrote, a couple of paragraphs on subjects here that have to do with sequestration. And I thought it would really be a timely for us to just step back from the grind of stories and really kind of take these ideas apart and put them back together again. Now, the third point that you wrote about, which we talked about a few minutes ago, is the effect on efficiency of programs. The second item that you're writing about is the sequester's effect on the federal workforce. Now, I can't imagine that this is doing anything good for morale. And that's the first thing that I think a lot of people go to. But you're writing about some other more technical issues that really are a lot more critical, it seems to me, to the way the agencies operate on a day-to-day basis than just are people happy to be there, right? And are they excited or sad or whatever, that kind of thing.
Yeah, if you look at the impact on the workforce, obviously the morale issue is a huge one. Federal employees frequently feel like they're used as political footballs, and nobody wants to be a football. So that's a huge issue. Go beyond that issue, though, and you start seeing a lot of things that can really hurt the government and its operations for a very long time. Look at recruiting, for example. A lot of agencies have hiring freezes in effect now. And those hiring freezes have a short-term effect and a long-term effect. A good example of the long-term effect is back during the reinventing government days. There was a decision that the federal government had too many HR people and too many procurement people. They were the control types of positions. So they cut back on them dramatically. And as a result, a lot of agencies did virtually no hiring of procurement people and HR people 15, 18 years ago. Now you go to a lot of agencies and say, okay, where are your biggest problems and where do you have real issues with finding mid and senior level talent? HR and procurement. The people who would have been hired, who should be moving into GS-15 level positions, SES level positions, aren't there. And I can't tell you how many times people have called me looking for someone for a senior HR position and saying, you know, I keep advertising this position and I just don't get someone. I don't get good candidates. What we're going to do is we're going to set the whole government up for that 15 years from now. So the long-term effect on that can be really horrendous. The second one that's even more deadly immediately is, you know, you and I have talked a lot, I think, in the past about the retirement wave that's been starting to emerge now. and more federal employees are becoming retirement eligible. Think about an employee, let's say in the Department of Defense, who's told you're going to be furloughed one day a week for the rest of the year. So let's translate that into English. We are going to cut your pay 20%. That's what that is. It's a 20% pay cut. And let's say this employee is retirement eligible. I picked a nice, easy number, 32 years of service. If somebody's got 32 years of service and they decide to retire, they're going to get 60% of their high three salary for their retirement income. Their high three is probably what they're making right now because they've been under a pay freeze for several years. So they're going to get 60% of their pay if they don't show up. They're going to get 80% of their pay if they do show up. Now let's take out the percentage they pay into the retirement fund. So they're not going to pay that anymore when they retire. And they're going to pay that out of that 80%.
Yes.
They're going to have a lower income tax burden because their income will go down a bit. Most of them are probably not going to keep putting money, well, they're not going to put money into the TSP because they're going to be retired. So if you're maxing out your TSP contributions, you take that out of your cash flow. What you find is if you come to work and you're going to be getting 80% of your pay and you take out all those things like retirement deductions and TSP, you're going to get maybe 60% of your pay, or you can retire and you can get 60% of your pay. Now, I don't know about you, but if somebody said, I'll give you a dollar if you work and I'll give you a dollar if you don't work, pick one.
Yeah. I love this job, but that's a pretty compelling argument, Jeff.
So it's going to cause a lot of people to say, okay, now I'm at the point where I'm just being kind of silly by hanging around. And this steadily increasing number of retirements that we've been seeing will go up dramatically. We will push a lot of people out the door. At the same time, we're seeing hiring freezes, so you can't bring people in. Now, if you're looking at that saying, wow, great, we'll reduce the size of agencies by doing that, that's not really a good way to reduce the size of agencies, by just reducing it by whoever goes out the door next. What happens if you lose 10, 15% of your workforce and it's your very best employees? You can't hire behind them.
And it goes back to what you and I talked about is you've lost those employees, but you haven't lost any mission requirements from Congress. You're still expected to complete the full list of missions that Congress has tasked your agency with.
The mission is still there. The talent is not there anymore. You don't have enough people to get the work done. You can't go out and hire new people. What you'll see is you'll see that there will be lots of promotion opportunities, but you might find that the level of available talent is such that the quality of the folks you're able to pick for some of those promotions won't be what you might have hoped you would get.
And it's not that those people aren't capable, it's just they're not prepared for that level of performance yet. I mean, it's just the way the ladder works.
Yeah, and so this one can hurt in so many different ways. And it's got the potential to have just catastrophic impacts on the federal workforce in ways that are far more than just cutting somebody's pay by 20%.
The impact that on the workforce is what you've chosen as the second of the three things that you're writing about on the Federal News Countdown this week, and it fits with what we're going to talk about in the second most popular story on the sequester page at federalnewsradio.com. We'll do that when we come back, a special edition of the Federal News Countdown this week with Jeff Neal, and we'll continue in just a minute on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Eagle Hoops fans, the best seats in Vendor Arena for the 2012-2013 season are just a phone call away. Call the AU Athletics ticket office at 202-885-TIXX today to place your $50 deposit on 2012-2013 season tickets to see AU Eagles men's basketball. Season tickets are the only way to secure the best sideline reserve chair back seats all season long. Place your season ticket deposit at 202-885-TIXX today and buy American.
Hey everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only and best food and wine variety show.
On Sunday, February 24th, we'll be talking with new chef Andrew Merkert. He is opening up his restaurant, Bouchart. He's working with lots of area farmers, and he's bringing some in. And the Capital Wine Festival is back. I believe we'll be tasting some wine.
I believe we will. That's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday at 11, right here on 1500 AM.
Hundreds of thousands of furloughs and cuts to every agency program. That's the reality if sequestration goes into effect on March 1st. Will Congress and the White House be able to reach a deal to avert the $85 billion in cuts this year? Will federal employees be able to survive the one-day-per-week furloughs? And how hard will industry be hit? Federal News Radio is your source for the most up-to-date information on sequestration. Find it all at federalnewsradio.com/sequestration.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Donna Brockington is a D.C. resident and works for the Office of Personnel Management.
It's a lot easier to make federal employees the scapegoats of the deficit. We didn't create it. I know people who buy their own supplies to do their jobs, to do their federal government job. And it's time for them to stop blaming us as the scapegoats and putting us in the middle of all these fights and debates and taking money from us.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I mentioned this is a special edition of the Federal News Countdown. We're focused on sequestration this afternoon with Jeff Neal of ICF International. And Jeff is writing about sequestration, three points that he wanted to make as he was watching the sequestration stories on federalnewsradio.com. My colleague Jack Moore is listing on the in-depth page later today the five most viewed stories on our sequestration page at federalnewsradio.com. And we'll mention number two in just a moment, Jeff, and talk about that in the context of some of the things that you're writing. But I did want to mention that we're going to do the Federal News Countdown will be on hiatus next week. The program will come back 2 weeks from today, standard format, two guests, and the three most important stories of the week. Next week, all of this sequestration stuff is quite honestly a bit of a downer. And so we're going to try to lighten it up a little bit next week. And you remember the show Match Game?
Yes.
From the 70s?
I loved it.
It was my favorite show in the history of television. I think it's the funniest show that's ever been on TV. And so we are going to do an edition of Match Game 1500 this time next week. And we're going to have Jenny Mattingly from Shaw, Bransford & Roth, who's also a big fan of the show, and Rob Burton, who you know was right at OFPP and DOD. And they're going to be the contestants. And my colleagues here at Federal News Radio are going to be the stars on the panel. And we've written all kinds of questions that are, the kinds of things about the kinds of things that we cover. And they have blanks in them. And Rob and Jenny will try to fill in the blanks. And my colleagues will try to match them. And then each of them will be playing for a charity. And they'll each get some money for their charity. And then the winner of the game gets a little extra bonus for their charity.
Great idea.
Thank you. I'm really excited about it. I'm maybe more excited about it than I should be. But that's next Friday at this time. So the countdown will be back 2 weeks from today as we do Match Game 1500 next Friday in the 3 o'clock hour. The second most looked at story on the sequestration page at federalnewsradio.com, which is very easy to find. It's federalnewsradio.com/sequestration, is headlined Furloughs Pose Pitfalls for Managers and Rank and File Feds. John Mahoney of Tully Rinke's Labor and Employment Practice Group was on the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Emily Kopp this week talking about furloughs and trying to help employees understand what are my rights, what happens to me if I get one of those notices, if an agency says you're on the list and you're eligible. What does that look like to you? My thought about that was, MSPB will probably just be overwhelmed with people who are going, wait a minute, something about this doesn't look right to me. What's the procedure look like?
Well, what happens is when an employee gets a furlough notice, depending on the length of the furlough, they could have appeal rights to MSPB. And MSPB is not going to be able to respond to a million or more appeals of furloughs. So and I have heard people say that, if you appeal, then the furlough doesn't happen until it's all done. And that's actually not accurate. The furlough will happen. And then if you win the appeal, you would get the money back. All the MSPB can look at in a case like that is, did the agency follow the regulations? They can't look at your judgment. Should you have furloughed Fred for 2 days instead of Fred and Betty Lou for 1 day each? They can't look at that. They can just look at, did you follow the rules? And on something as widespread as this, where there's a potential for thousands of appeals, what they're going to end up doing in all likelihood is looking at the agency level and seeing, did each agency follow the process? And then they'll probably have some sort of expedited way of reviewing those just based on what they know that each agency has done. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to do their job. MSPB does have an important mission. They do a lot of work looking at appeals of downgrades, of removals, of long-term suspensions, of some other issues they look at, such as reduction of force. That's much more critical than something like furloughs, where it's pretty obvious if a furlough is happening now, why it's happening. When an agency says, we're going to furlough everybody, how do you argue with that? Did they get the 30 days notice they're entitled to? Yes. That's about it. There's not going to be much to look at in a case like that.
It's a pretty straightforward checklist, it sounds like. You go down the list, did this happen? Yes, did this happen? And it's all, and it seems to be all very obvious, too.
Yes, it is. This is not an easy one to win an appeal on.
So that possibility is not really a very good possibility for employees. We talked just a moment ago about some of the things, some of the observations you're writing about, that we have posted on federalnewsradio.com about how this affects the workforce. And this seems to me, this is just another thing where not only is this possible, the employee has just about no control over how it's done or how it happens. Obviously, the unions are involved, right, in cases where people are represented by CBAs.
Well, unions can negotiate impact and implementation of a lot of management actions, and furlough is one of them. That ability to negotiate doesn't extend forever. And in the end, if the negotiation goes on too long, an employee could actually end up suffering for it. If sequestration sticks and actually lasts the entire fiscal year, if an agency needs to furlough employees for 10 days and they say, okay, we want to spread it out over 10 pay periods, at least an employee can manage that a little bit better. Imagine what happens if it gets delayed so long that the agency has to say to an employee, okay, you're going to be furloughed for 10 days and it's the next pay period. Thank you. Go away. Then they just miss an entire paycheck all at once. And that could be really harmful for a lot of folks. There are a lot of people who still live paycheck to paycheck. And when you're living paycheck to paycheck and a paycheck disappears in its entirety, you could really be hurt by that. And that could be pretty devastating for some families.
That's one of the things about this that makes it even harder for us to try to parse this is there are any number of possible outcomes, any one of which could kind of eliminate any of the possibilities that we're looking at now. Congress could decide they're going to cut a deal after sequestration, but before the CR runs out, right, that negates all of this. And right, then we're back to kind of where we were with the shutdown, where all of this work was pretty much done for nothing.
Right.
And that I'm starting to hear that worry coming from people inside the agencies. Not so much that sequestration could happen. The attitude seems to be it's going to happen, but it still might all wind up being wasted energy.
I could tell you at DHS when I was the chief human capital officer, we did a lot of shutdown planning. And when you look at the number of hours that got put into it, it would be measured in terms of work years that were lost for nothing. There was no benefit to the taxpayers that came out of it. There was no improvement in Homeland Security as a result of it. There was no savings. There was nothing. It was just, when you talk about fraud, waste, and abuse in government, that's a perfect example of waste. Dollars spent for nothing.
Jeff Neal is my guest on the Federal News Countdown. This week we're talking about 3 points that he's written on sequestration, and you can read those later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And in conjunction with that, the top 5 most read stories from federalnewsradio.com/sequestration. When we come back, Jeff's number 1 point on sequestration and the most viewed story of the week on sequestration at federalnewsradio.com. Back in a moment.
Hi, this is Dave Gran, founder and president of MilitaryByOwner.com, a leading provider of advertising services and support to military families trying to sell or rent their homes. When looking for a web development company to design our site, we needed a battle-tested winner. Thankfully, we chose AmericanEagle.com. After reviewing many website developers that potentially could build a site for us, what tilted the scales in favor of AmericanEagle.com was their depth of experience and knowledge, 17 years of successful online development. AmericanEagle.com has helped the Military By Owner website to become a leader in the military real estate market. Working with AmericanEagle.com, we've experienced exceptional service and, most importantly, great returns on our investment. For these reasons, we're a proud partner with AmericanEagle.com for all our online needs. I strongly recommend AmericanEagle.com.
Call AmericanEagle.com at 703-WEBSITE to learn how they can develop a website solution for you. That's AmericanEagle.com, 703-WEBSITE.
Caps fans, tickets are going fast. You don't want to miss any of the action.
Capitals score!
As the Caps take on the Carolina Hurricanes on Tuesday, February 26th at 7 p.m. Do your part in building America's hockey capital and buy your tickets today by calling 800-745-3000. That's 800-745-3000. Or go to WashingtonCaps.com.
Join the Women's Center on Saturday, March 9th from 8 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. at the McLean Hilton for one of Washington's best conferences for women. This annual leadership conference will feature a number of fascinating speakers, including Zipcar founder Robin Chase, Vice Admiral Ann Rondo, and UVA President Dr. Teresa Sullivan. 7 educational workshops will also be held by some of the region's leading experts. For more information about the conference and sponsorship opportunities, visit thewomenscenter.org. Register online today.
What are the top priorities for the FBI's Facilities and Logistics Services Division? How is the FBI pursuing more sustainable business and supply chain practices? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and more with Patrick Findlay, Assistant Director, FBI's Facilities and Logistics Services Division, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Jeff Neal of ICF International. And we're talking about, on the Federal News Countdown this week, sequestration. There's nothing else, really, that people are talking about. It's on the minds of everybody everywhere we go in government. And everybody that I talk to, and I imagine the same thing for you, Jeff. So what we are doing on the countdown this week is Jeff has chosen the three most important points about sequestration, and my colleague Jack Moore has brought in the 5 most viewed stories from federalnewsradio.com/sequestration. And the number one point that you're making and the most viewed story of the week fit together, I think, precisely. Your most important point on sequestration is the effects on services to the public.
Right.
In my view, the most important, above all, service that the federal government provides to the American people is keeping them safe, whether it's here in the United States, as your former agency does and other federal agencies do, or keeping us safe around the world as the military does. The most viewed story on our sequestration page this week is my colleague Jared Serbu's story, headlined "Pentagon Starts 45-Day Countdown to Civilian Furloughs," and it's the coverage of the news conference this week by Bob Hale and Jess Wright at the Pentagon, talking about the furloughs that they will do at the Pentagon. And it fits, I think, as I said, very precisely with what you're writing about the way that the government will be impacted as far as how they deliver services to the American people. And it strikes me that people don't really understand that impact quite yet.
Yeah, the government exists to provide services to the American people. And when you look at some of these things and what sequestration will do, it will harm those services. I'll go to my former agency, DHS. You know, DHS doesn't have a lot of exemptions to sequestration. Border patrol agents are not exempt. Transportation security officers are not exempt. The people who actually carry out the Homeland Security mission of DHS are not exempt. And that means that there are going to be fewer hours for border patrol agents, fewer hours for transportation security officers. I don't know about you, but I stood in line for about 15 minutes to get through an airport in San Antonio last night. Imagine what happens if that standing in line is an hour and a half because of the hours of transportation security officers being cut back. That could create some real problems for people. And it's frustrating enough to have to stand in line. It's really frustrating when you're standing in line for a long time.
So here's my question about that. I'll use that one as an example. All right, let's just say that at a particular airport in a particular period of time, there are 10 shifts scheduled for screeners. And we'll just use 10% as a round number for the sake of argument. My sense is that that would mean that instead of 10, you could only schedule 9 shifts. Is that – am I looking at it wrong? Thinking about it in a different way?
Look at an airport, for example. You have a certain number of checkpoints you have to maintain, and you have the baggage screening that has to be done. The only way to shut down checkpoints is to reduce the number of people there. You can't just tell the people, well, work faster. You can't keep them doing the same job for longer. A screener, for example, can't sit there and look at baggage going through an X-ray machine for longer than maybe 30 minutes at a time because they start zoning out.
Yeah, you just get squirrely.
And TSA has been able to prove that it harms their effectiveness if they do that. So they're rotating them constantly. So what you'll end up doing is when you get to a checkpoint, instead of having maybe 5 lanes open, you might have 4 lanes open. You can't have 4.5 lines. You know, if it's a 10% cut, you can't have 4.5 lines. You got to have either 4 or 5. So you'll cut that back. With something like the Border Patrol, you'll probably look at huge cuts in overtime. Border Patrol uses a fair amount of overtime because they don't really have enough people to do the things they want to do, so they use overtime. That'll probably be cut. And that means fewer people on the border. And frankly, if I wanted to get across the American border and I knew the Border Patrol was going to have less people maybe for the next 6 months, I might think, well, wow, that's perfect time to try to get across the border because they're not going to be able to staff properly to do that job.
We could do the whole rest of the show, the 3 more hours of the program probably on this. And unfortunately, I have a terrific lineup of guests to talk to this afternoon in addition to you, Jeff, but I really have enjoyed having you here for this kind of different way of looking at the countdown this week. And thank you for the thoughts that you put down for me, and we'll post those, as I mentioned, on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Great to see you.
Good to see you again.
When we continue on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, second hour of the program right around the corner. And I want to remind you again about next Friday's special edition of Match Game 1500. More details on that throughout the beginning of the week next week on federalnewsradio.com. And the Federal News Countdown returns 2 weeks from today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.